Hi, everyone. This is Gary Kay, and you are listening to my Daily Rants and Raves. Daily Rants and Raves are part of the Rave Radio Podcast Network, which is being brought to you live at ISC 2016. We're here in the Kramer booth, and we want to welcome you, Joel.
Thanks very much, Gary. I'm really glad to be here. It's been a heck of a day. I think 4 days is going to be too much for me.
Too much for a lot of people, I think. This is the end of the third day of the show, so we still have one more show day. This is the biggest, longest show they've ever had. I did get a scoop. We are going to have over 65,000 people, close to 70,000 people here, which will set a huge record.
We predicted 68,371.
There you go. We'll take that.
Right. And if I hit that, then I'm going to go home and buy some lottery tickets.
All right. Let's do it.
All right. What was product of the day, Gary?
Good gosh. I spent a lot of time walking around today, and I'd have to say, quite honestly, there were a lot of stuff, and I want to kind of do a drum roll here. Today was my day to focus on projector companies because I wanted to see what each of them offered and what was different about each one. And I'd have to say that every one of them have impressive offerings now, and that the movement towards laser projection has taken a foothold. And I'd have to say that I'm going to say for the afternoon, my daily pick is going to go to all the laser phosphor projector systems. But one that stood out to me is the Epson, and I'm going to tell you why. Epson has a non-organic laser phosphor projector and a non-organic wheel. And it's interesting because what they're able to do, since it's non-organic, is they're able to have a little bit more control over colorimetry. And it didn't make sense to me until a technical engineer sat down with me and explained how the whole thing worked. And then I went over to another booth where they're using laser phosphor DLP, and it's not inorganic. It's organic. So this inorganic technology that I said non-organic, but inorganic technology that Epson has is kind of interesting because it allows them to sort of program in control of the colorimetry of the projector over time based on light levels. So the consistency of this and the performance of this led them to now offer a longer warranty than pretty much anyone in the industry as far as life of a projector. So they're offering a 20,000 hour warranty, but what they're doing that's different, a lot of people are saying 20,000 hours, theirs is for every single component in the projector. So that means you'll never have to replace the LCDs, no LCD yellowing, it's a 3-LCD projector, no smoke affecting it, so you put it in the smokiest possible environment. If any time during that 20,000 hours you have any problem, they'll replace it for free. So this is a pretty interesting claim and a pretty bold sort of thing to stand behind. And I have to give them a leg up on the other LCD or other laser phosphor companies. The other thing is it's 25,000 lumens. Now, again, I don't have a light meter and I couldn't measure it, but the dang thing is bright. And they're saying it's 25,000 lumens. Epson's usually fairly conservative on their specs. But the thing that most impressed me was the fact that they're willing to put up a 20,000-hour warranty and then say, if anything happens to this projector, we will fix it or we'll replace it.
Wow. So that's an impressive claim to fame.
But that said, all the laser phosphor products are awesome because they're all brighter than what you normally see from the same size projector. The idea that you don't have replacement lamps, but most importantly to me, and this is going to be from an image snob, most importantly to me, the colorimetry matters because, you know, as you know, Luke and I taught this class the perfect image. Luke Rawls and I taught this class the perfect image. So I'm an image snob. I want everything to look awesome. And one thing that's always bothered me about traditional lamp technology is, as you know, over time, colorimetry changes and uniformity is completely destroyed mostly. So you get hot spots and you get yellowing and then you get color degradation where reds start to look weird and yellows especially. This new technology, laser phosphor technology, is going to give us the image quality of phosphor, but the strength of laser in uniformity and colorimetry.
Okay, well, if we're picking technology of the day, I'm going to go to the other display technology and say I think OLED's finally coming into its own, and just awesome images and awesome brightness and awesome thinness that we're getting from OLED displays. I'm used to working with OLEDs that are 4 inches, right? And, you know, today to see 65-inch OLEDs with the quality that we do and the yield rate coming up, OLED's going to be a force.
Who had the 65-inch?
LG.
So those curved OLEDs are 65-inch?
Yeah.
Wow. I thought they were like 55. They're
65. They're gorgeous. And they had lots of other OLEDs. They had a two-sided flat OLED that was 55-inch. That's, you know, they've got it spinning on a pole because it's two-sided and it's only about half an inch thick. And it's unbelievably bright. Doesn't require any backlighting, of course, because OLED emits its own light.
Yeah.
And as yield rate goes up, it's going to be, you know, it's going to heavily displace LED and LCD technology in flat panel displays.
Yeah, you're going to have an interesting battle here. Another product I want to mention that I saw today that really surprised me, it's an interesting technology. So, and it's related to what you said. Here we have this convergence or this clash getting ready to happen in the rooms, meeting rooms, boardrooms, conference rooms, where you get into that size range of 80 inches and above, and now you're looking at, do I use a projector or do I use a panel? Because below 80 inches, it's almost a slam dunk. Not totally, but almost a slam dunk to use a panel. Above 80 inches, you know, of course, unless it's 4K. Above 80 inches, now you're looking at panel prices that make it almost unaffordable to put in a flat panel.
In my company and home, that breakpoint's 100.
Okay, 100 inches. So let's say it's 100, whatever it is. You have a number of projector manufacturers and screen companies coming up with some interesting packaging ideas. So, for example, DNP has something called the laser panel. The laser panel is a packaged projector, which is 1080p, short throw lens, and it comes interactive or non-interactive, depending on what you want to pay. You pay a little bit more for interactive. And a 100-inch diagonal screen and everything to connect it together, all packaged together. And the cost of that is about 50% to 70% less than a 100-inch LCD would be. So the cost per square foot, square meter, whatever, is significantly lower. So there's going to be applications with these short throw projectors and screens like this. You're going to see the battle for that space last a little bit longer until these companies like LG, Samsung, etc., they bring the price of the panels that are, whatever, 85, 90, 95, 100 inch down.
Okay. And if I'm going to name my technology of the day, if I'm going to name my product of the day, the new Savant handheld remote is sexy, clean, and I really love the way their software works. And I'm going to be writing later on a disagreement to your comment on Crestron pulling out. I think they're afraid of the mid-market heavily replacing them.
That will be very interesting to see is what happens with that, what the ultimate outcome of that is. I'm interested to find out people's impressions. There were a lot of rumors about that, so I actually basically called Randy Klein and said, hey, will you sit down with me and tell me what's really going on? He granted me the one and only interview he's going to do on this, and then he said the issue's dead. So I sat down with him and shot a 10, 15-minute interview with him where he literally laid it out. Here's what we decided, here's why we decided it, and here's where we're going in the future. The one and only interview. So I've uploaded it. It's on our website. It's at ravepubs.com. It's on our microsite here at ISE, the ravepubs.com/ISE2016. And he lays out why they decided not to come back to Cedia. And he says Cedia is becoming too much of a low-end show. They don't like the do-it-yourselfers, and they don't like any of the other products that are not integrator centric. And what he means by that is he wants people who own yachts, he wants people who own expensive apartments and expensive homes buying their stuff. He's not interested. He said very specifically, I'm not interested in the low end market and I'm not interested in the mid range market.
Okay, well, here I am. And as you know, I've been building a smart home and spent a lot of money on it. And I already owned all the Crestron and AMX hardware that it would have taken to do my home, and I have programmers for it. And instead, I actually decided to go Insteon and become a HomeKit developer. Why? My home has to be more flexible than something that you have to code the way that you do for Crestron and AMX.
Right.
Now, I'm not even saying that it could take over the boardroom,
right,
but I am saying that the low-end mid-market are going to be the big influencers in homes, even high-end homes. Because even the high-end homes that we're working with are in love with things like Apple technology.
Right. And so their response to this is, good, go for it. Go do your own stuff. And if you have the money, we hope that you upgrade to something higher end. We don't want to talk to you unless you have the money. That's one sort of response. And the other response is, okay, when your home is hacked, then maybe come to us. Because their thing is, if you're buying all this stuff that's connected to the network, how much security, and maybe you don't care about security now, but when your home gets hacked, then
my
you're
security
care about
is
security.
Cisco, Gary. You know my studio.
I agree, but you're not the average. Most people are just buying, you know, Apple AirPorts, Airport Expresses, or whatever
yeah,
off
for
the
sure.
shelf, and they're saying that when people start having security problems, then they'll upgrade. And you know, or they'll become more serious about it. But again, they don't care about you and I. Their primary target market is that truly custom. They want a network. I mean, he said it. We want a network of integrators to make a lot of money off our product.
And I totally agree with that. I mean, and I would not put that product into any of the corporate work that I do. I just looked at it and said, my home changes so often.
Right.
That I had to have something that, yes, I brought my programmers in to do the first part of it,
yep.
but I need to be able to make changes. I need to be able to drag and drop devices and say, now this is going to work here. I move things from room to room. I change things. And by the time I got done with things like Nest thermostats and Insteon-based security system, which is phenomenal in terms of the way it runs with my smartphone and my iPad and all of that, and I became, and actually had two of my programmers become HomeKit developers simply because I wanted to see where it was going. Will it replace anything in the high-end home yet? No, absolutely not. And I agree with him on that. Except it moves up every year. And I think you need to be able to be there where it is to show the difference. Because if you're not, let's try and out-market Apple.
Right,
go ahead.
Right. And their thing is, we already know who the integrators are that are doing high-end work. They know who we are. We'll keep catering to them through direct training, talking to them one-on-one, everything else that we need to do and not having to necessarily go to a show. They said that we already have the net. We don't necessarily need any more integrators. We know who they are. They know who we are, and they'll integrate us. So I think what they've done is they've drawn a line in the sand saying this is our half of the market, and this is the rest of the market. And they said, regardless of what we think the market's going to do, CD, you're not catering to my half. You're catering to the other half, so we're not going to support you. Well, that doesn't mean they're not going to come back. The other thing he made really clear is that, look, CD is 3 days a year. We're supporting them 362 days of the year. We're not supporting them for those 3 days. We're going to support them with education. We're going to support them with financial support, and we're going to support them with other things. But we're just not going to go to the show anymore.
Well, you know, I do have to grant him that approach has worked for Extron.
Right. I mean, Extron, you know, I think a lot of people draw parallels to this. The difference with Extron, and Extron pulled out of Infocom and ISE for a totally different reason, but the result will be interesting to track for Crestron because they're going to try to do the same thing. Extron pulled out of Infocom and ISE because they said, you know, for the amount of money we're spending. So in Crestron's case, it wasn't the money. It was they said, look, we're exhibiting to a bunch of people that don't really care about us. We're exhibiting to people who are going after the do-it-yourself market, and that most of our integrators aren't going anymore because they think it's too low end for them. So Infocom and ISE is not what Extron was saying. They saw the growth in the show. What Extron was saying is, we can take this money and spend it better by having direct relationships with our integrators and not having to do it once a year, but do it ongoing. So
okay.
That is two different philosophies for reasons for pulling
well,
out.
Well, goodness knows, you know, they know more about their market than I do.
Yeah, and they've been successful. And I've talked to Extron about it since. And I've said, hey, you're going to come back in the show. Like, everything's working fine right now. And you know, what they're doing is they're spending money, flying people to their training centers and doing the things they need to do to train their potential integrators and future integrators to understand their systems. And so it's a different decision-making process. So it was very interesting because, you know, having a sort of a front-row view of both of those decisions, I can see them. I can totally get it. And I think Cydia, certainly Infocom and ISE, are not in a bad position at all. I think Cydia is in a tough position because they have to decide. They're representing the high-end home. How high-end are they representing? And do they make, you know, they stake a claim in the market? Because here's what's interesting. This is an interesting point. So you have two companies, Barco and Christie, who had not been at Cydia before except in the last 2 years. Both of them launched high-end home initiatives with Barco Residential, Christie Residential. They are trying to reach the same people that Crestron's trying to reach. They don't care about you and I. They don't care about the mid-range of the market. They're only going after, because the projectors start at 60 grand. I mean, they might have lower end ones, but they pretty much start at very high, and they go on up to 200,000. They have to be at least looking at this, because if Crestron is saying, look, this is not These are not the people that are doing $15,000 home systems. They're doing $2,000, $1,000. CEDIA has to be worried that Barco and Christie and companies that are completely relying on the very high end of the market, and there's others. I'm only naming those two off the top of my head.
Sure.
Who only do super high end work. We're not talking about Rust Sound here. We're not talking about Niles. We're talking about the very high end companies.
I got you.
Yeah.
I mean, but here's my point, which is they have a super premium product, without a doubt, right? But people, I mean, you're going to a lot of even wealthy families who are approaching it with, you know, I'm building a new house. Let's go look at what's available.
Right.
Do you not have to be there where people like Apple are spending a lot of money in marketing?
Okay, so their response to that was, hey, look at the exhibitor or look at the attendee numbers and you'll see no end users are going. So we're not missing any end users. They're not going to the show.
All right, all right.
Their response to that was, "This all integrators are going to the show, and we already know who our integrators are. It's not, if a bunch of end users were coming, we'd probably stay."
Well, since I don't do Cedia, I only do the commercial AV shows anyway because that's what my business does. I don't like high-end home because I have always had an opinion. In corporate, you meet a spec,
right?
And it's defined in advance. In high-end home, you meet a dream.
Right? An experience, whatever.
Right, exactly. And that's, you know, it's a and the integrators that do it specialize in it.
Right.
I'm my only reason for thinking they're wrong is that I can see the billions that are about to be spent on this market, and I think that there are going to be more and more people looking at it who bought Apple Watches, who bought, you know, those kind of products and are really, really interested by it and are going to go look where those products are. And Crestron downsizing into Cedia, I understand. Crestron leaving it was probably something that I don't know their market, but it doesn't look good.
So when I approached them about that, they were like, we're either all in or not. And so that's their approach.
There.
So, but, this is going to be debated a long time. And ultimately, The time will tell, right? We'll have to wait a couple of years and see if they come back in, or wait a couple of years and see if Cedia woos them back in or changes their plan, or if they both stay on this current track. But I appreciate you joining me today. We're going to come back tomorrow with two more podcasts at least. Joel's been doing video casting and podcasting the last 3 days. I've been doing some video casting, not as much podcasting as he's been doing, but you can catch all of our coverage of ISE 2016 at ravepubs.com/ISE2016. Thanks for listening to my Daily Rants and Raves.
Thanks a lot, folks, and we'll be back tomorrow, and Gary and I can argue some more.